Hi, I'm Jessica Steinberg.
And I'm Amanda Borchel-Dunn. Welcome to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing.
Your update on what's important in Israel, the Middle East,
and the Jewish world.
Hello, and welcome to the Daily Briefing. Today is Tuesday, July 26th. I'm Ann Gordon, in for Amanda Borchel-Dunn, here today with our U.S. correspondent Jacob Magid and our editor of Tech Israel, Ricky Ben-David. Hello to you both.
Hi, Ann.
Hey, Ann. Hey, Jacob.
The future is now. Israel has been testing a flying car, and we'll get all the details. We'll also get an update on the state of the tech sector in Israel. That means some recent dramatic layoffs, but also investments and a chronic shortage of engineers. It's been nearly 2 weeks since U.S. President Joe Biden visited the Middle East. We'll hear how his visit to a hospital in East Jerusalem nearly became a diplomatic incident and how the United States' relationship with Israel is being shaped by Biden at this time. Jacob, let's start with you. Tell us what's been happening in the follow-up to Biden's trip. Beyond his bout with COVID, he's better now, right?
Yeah, he says he's better. I think he's still in isolation, but I think he doesn't have really any symptoms left over except for a scratchy throat. And is busy at work. I think his office tweeted out a picture of him working next to his dog and also in a full suit. So over the past few days, I've had some conversations with senior officials in the administration to get some of the behind the scenes of what went down during the trip and the lead up to the trip and how it's feeling about how things went moving forward. And I found one particularly interesting story that surrounded Biden's visit on two Fridays ago to the Augusta Victoria Hospital in East Jerusalem. And this is where he made an announcement that the U.S. would be donating $100 million to the East Jerusalem Hospital Network, which serves primarily Palestinians. And because this was seen by Israel as an attempt to acknowledge in some sort of degree the Palestinian connections to East Jerusalem, Israel made a point to allow Biden to have representatives from the Israeli government accompany him at the tour of the hospital. And they pushed this for months, both during the tenure of former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett, and then also even when the more relatively moderate Yair Lapid replaced him, this effort continued then. And it peaked several weeks before the visit when the advance team for the U.S. came to Israel to start finalizing details for the trip, and they then made a visit to the Augusta Victoria Hospital on the Mount of Olives. And at that visit, they arrived, and all of a sudden they were met by two officials from the Israeli Health Ministry that had said they were there because the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Tom Nides, gave them approval to come and everything was fine. But the U.S. senior administration official I spoke with described it as they were trying to crash the meeting, and then actually Tom Nides had not given any approval and they were just making it up. And this was part of this, again, this Israeli effort to try to get involved into this visit, which the U.S. really felt was an apolitical initiative, and it wasn't trying to dictate its policy on Jerusalem through the tour. So there was a great deal of frustration and a feeling that the Israeli government was trying to turn this into a major diplomatic incident. Eventually, though, I think several days before the trip, the Israeli government just made this strategic decision, as the senior administration official I spoke with put it, to let the matter go and not try to push the Israeli presence during the meeting. And it largely was seen as going off without a hitch. What's interesting, though, is that the Palestinians were also kind of frustrated with it, in that they were hoping that Biden, during his subsequent meeting in Bethlehem with Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas, would put out a joint statement with the Palestinians saying that that the U.S. views East Jerusalem as the future capital of the Palestinian state. But what the senior administration official I spoke with told me is that the U.S. had a hard time doing this because doing so would have violated current policy that was put in place by the Trump administration when Donald Trump recognized Jerusalem as Israel's capital and said that the future boundaries of the state would be of Jerusalem would be subject to negotiations, meaning that the U.S. could not now take a position specifically regarding East Jerusalem and whether it was Israeli or Palestinian. And that was why the Biden administration decided to hold out on putting some sort of joint statement with the Palestinians during their meeting with Abbas. So a lot of the Jerusalem policy was very much central to the trip, definitely behind the scenes, it might have come off publicly as there weren't any issues, but definitely in the lead up, there were a lot of questions surrounding the issue.
And then tell us also, you wrote these several articles that kind of all come together. There's a discussion about Shirin Abu Akleh. There's a discussion about the Abraham Accords. A lot has been going on, I feel, in the U.S.-Israel relations of late.
Yeah, Shirin Abu Akleh, definitely her killing definitely hovered over the trip. There was a lot of concern initially that it was going to totally derail efforts with the Palestinians to try to move forward a package to strengthen the PA. What did happen is that, it was mentioned during the meeting that Biden held with MBS in Saudi Arabia, but more related to our issues, the PA again pushed that the U.S. Hold a strong stance on this issue, and a lot of journalists have been pressing the Biden administration to stand by or show solidarity with their colleague and make sure that justice is served in her killing. But I spoke with a senior administration official again several days ago, who said that actually, despite the calls by not only from the Palestinians, but also Democratic lawmakers to have a new investigation opened by the U.S., an independent investigation to look into the circumstances of her death, the Biden administration will not be doing that because they feel that the ballistic analysis of the bullet that found that it was too damaged to really make a definitive conclusion is as far as that they're really going to be able to go. There were definitely calls for them to try to do their own investigation in terms of questioning and interrogating of the soldiers on both sides that were present during the clash on May 11th. But the U.S. is holding back on pushing back on those calls and saying that we've done what we think is what we can. We've reviewed both the Israeli and the Palestinian investigations. We've determined that it was likely that an Israeli bullet was fired and killed her. But we're not going to do anything beyond that. And I think this frustrated a lot of lawmakers who are calling for more to be done. But it seems like the Biden administration is doing its best to try and put this issue behind it, even though, interestingly, they are going to be hosting several relatives of Shirin Abu Akleh in Washington. They just made their way there yesterday, and they're expecting some meetings with the senior White House officials. So it'll be interesting to see, amidst the backdrop of this admission on their part that they don't want an investigation, how those meetings will go.
It sounds to me that for all that the U.S. is treading a fine line here, kind of its policy is supporting Israel. Is that as clear to everybody else as it is to me?
Yeah, I think that's the criticism that you were hearing from those frustrated with the policy, that the Biden administration is taking Israel's side on the Shirin Abu Akleh case. And then it's even further strengthened by the Biden administration's position on the Abraham Accords, which I also reported about how during the meeting with Abu Mazen, Biden pressed Abbas to cooperate with U.S. efforts to expand and strengthen the Abraham Accords. Palestinians, for their part, see them as this attempt to bypass their issue. And have never been very cooperative with it and called it this betrayal. But Biden used his meeting to kind of push the Palestinians to get on board because he feels that there are opportunities that the new relations between Israel and the Arab neighbors create for the Palestinians. Now Biden officials are pointing to the recent announcement that the Allenby crossing between the West Bank and Jordan will be open 24/7, and this was something that Morocco had pressed Israel to agree to in recent months. So that was the result of the Abraham Accords. Abbas did not give an answer to Biden when he brought up this issue at the meeting, and I think the U.S. administration is still waiting for an answer. It's probably unlikely that they're going to get a clear one, or at least definitely not a public one from the Palestinians, as they really see it as something that they can't be publicly cooperating with.
I guess we'll have to keep our eyes on the ball, as we always do on this particular topic. Now we're going to have a break. When we come back, we'll hear from Ricky and the world of technology.
I got married this Monday in the middle of a war.
You are not a soldier anymore. You are 50 years old. What is the matter with you?
It's like a couple of kilometers from here. Like, my friend has a 4x4. Let's just go cut across the fields and go get him.
Israel Stories, Wartime Diaries. Voices that try to capture slivers of life right now.
And he told me, take with you a sleeping bag and a tent and just go.
I texted him after I was told that he was killed.
From their eyes, I was a traitor.
Everybody needs their, blankie.
their teddy bear, something to make them feel safe.
I'm just another grandfather looking after his grandchild while his son is off at war.
These children of Hamas now will be the killer of my children.
I desperately wanted to talk about sex during my eulogy for Ido.
Everyone has to choose to be optimistic because we don't have room for pessimism.
Check out Israel's Story wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Daily Briefing listeners. I'm so happy you've joined us for our daily analysis of what's important in Israel, the Middle East, and the Jewish world. Like what you hear? Check out our Times Will Tell weekly podcast. Every Friday, you can hear conversations with authors, artists, archaeologists, and thought leaders from around the globe. Subscribe to Times Will Tell, our weekly half-hour feature, wherever you find your podcasts. Enjoy!
And we're back. So Ricky, how long before Israel starts looking like the old Jetsons cartoon? Will people be flying to work anytime soon?
I don't think that'll happen anytime soon. I think there's quite a long ways ahead, and we'll get into that in a moment. So we're talking about the Israeli startup Air, which developed the Air One, a two-seater electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft that does just that. It can take off, hover, and land vertically without needing a runway to go. It's a type of aircraft that includes helicopters, of course, military aircraft, and other types that are powered by rotor systems that generate that aerodynamic lift that supports the weight of the flight vehicle. Air was founded about 5 years ago, and this aircraft has been in development since. I first wrote about this company last year when they unveiled the design of this aircraft. And according to the company, it will be able to offer a range of about 110 miles or 177 kilometers on a single electric charge and go at a speed of up to 155 miles per hour or 250 kilometers per hour. Now, late last month, the aircraft completed a hover test over Kibbutz Megiddo in northern Israel, which was a cause for celebration for the company on its long path ahead toward the required certification to make this a reality when that happens. The test was done under the supervision of the Civil Aviation Authority to evaluate the performance of the aircraft for things like how it consumes energy, its flight control behavior, how it responds to windy air conditions. And the company has also been working with the Federal Aviation Authority in the U.S. to move things forward on that front. It does have a long road ahead, at the very least 3 years in terms of certification and getting to market. The company is targeting the consumer market, so individual clients will be able to purchase it one day and fly about town. And the company wants to put these aircrafts in the hands of individuals. And so they developed something called fly-by-intent software. It's a type of system that makes the aircraft accessible to ordinary people, not just trained pilots. So everyday people can take off one day. I like covering these types of stories because I think they can really grab the imagination and offer glimpses into what entrepreneurs are working on, even if it sounds futuristic. At the same time, I think we can all acknowledge that there's a gap that exists between new technologies, new systems out there, and the realities on the ground. For example, you know, I think we can all say that we still haven't nailed down a solid, coherent infrastructure for charging electric vehicles. But it's a start, and we start somewhere.
It's certainly very exciting. If this is not going to affect our daily lives, there's plenty in the high-tech sector, I think, that is affecting our daily lives. Tell us what's happening there. I know it's been a desirable industry work-wise for a very long time for so many, but what's with all these layoffs in bulk?
Right. It's been a tough year so far, at the very least a tough few months, generally speaking, for the global tech industry, including Israel's. The local tech sector relies heavily on foreign investments, foreign funding, especially American funding. And as the markets have taken a downturn, given rising inflation, supply chain issues that date back to the days of the pandemic, the height of the pandemic in 2020, and this year's Russian war on Ukraine, the funding environment has become much less favorable and much less generous, shall we say. So investors are more cautious, more jittery, and less inclined to offer the huge sums of funding that we saw in 2021. Granted, 2021 was a sort of anomaly, an exception, where money was flowing freely, valuations of companies were very high, and companies with barely discernible products and no real earnings were raising millions. So in 2021, we saw Israeli companies raise over $25 billion, an unheard of figure that is not likely to be repeated in the coming years. But so far in 2022, the tech sector has raised $10 billion. So there are some strengths there. Now, in 2021, all this money, what it has done is that it has demanded growth from companies. So there were hiring sprees, even amid a chronic shortage of talent. So Israel has been suffering from a shortage of engineers, developers, and computer science professionals for many, many years now. And it's becoming worse. According to the latest figures by the Israel Innovation Authority, there are about 20,000 unfilled positions in the tech sector in these specific fields. So these jobs are still very much in demand. At the same time, we're seeing layoffs as companies work to cut expenses and try to survive the next few months and the next few years. Some reports have put these layoffs into the thousands. And a lot of these layoffs are happening outside the core tech role. So new hires, people who just joined companies last year are getting laid off, junior staff, marketing roles, sales, and such. And what is happening has been described as a correction to 2021. And there's a belief that the stronger companies will eventually prevail and come out on top. For my upcoming article, I spoke to two people, one from the Israel Innovation Authority and one from the Startup Nation Policy Institute, who expressed concerns about a possible recession and concerns for companies in the short term. The question is, will they survive the next 5 months or so? And they also pointed out that some sectors are less affected than others. So industries like cybersecurity, health tech, medical tech, because of their demand, generally speaking, are in stronger position than other sectors.
It seems like a complicated, volatile situation, at least for now. We'll keep coming back to you for an update, at least for the next 5 months, while we find out what's really happening with our economy. That's it for today's Daily Briefing. Thank you, Jacob. Thank you, Ricky. Until next time.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Times of Israel's Daily Briefing. And thanks to our producer, Gilad Brownstein, and to Gili Amar for this out-of-this-world music.
You can find us daily wherever you find your podcasts.
And on our mothership, timesofisrael.com. Like what you hear? Consider rating us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify to spread the word.
And be sure to check out our weekly feature, Times Will Tell, released every Friday. Until next time.
Shalom.